Hi, this is Brighton Shang, the founder and CEO of AquaBite, pioneering AI-driven solutions for aquaculture farms worldwide. You're tuned into The Edge of AI, your go-to show for exploring the intersection of technology and sustainability. Keep listening.
Hello, AI podcast passengers. Jump on in. Here's what's to come on today's journey. Find out why this AI platform is at the forefront of sustainable fish production, leveraging artificial learning and computer vision to revolutionize aquaculture worldwide, how our guest is bringing sustainability to food supply while enhancing productivity, health, and profits, and the way their collaboration with Amazon is shaping the future of food production and closing the impending protein deficit. All this and more, take your seat.
Welcome aboard the Edge of AI podcast. Snap into your safety belt and prepare to explore the depths of the rapidly expanding AI universe. Each episode is a dispatch featuring hyper-relevant reports from the pilots, pioneers, and passengers aboard the AI rocket ship. We explore the latest use cases and developments in AI, hear from experts building tech, and learn how this disruptive force is transforming industries and society.
Welcome aboard the Edge of AI podcast. Snap into your safety belt and prepare to explore the depths of the rapidly expanding AI universe. Each episode is a dispatch featuring hyper-relevant reports from the pilots, pioneers, and passengers aboard the AI rocket ship. We explore the latest use cases and developments in AI. We hear from experts building the tech and empower you to enhance your life with AI and learn how this disruptive force is transforming industries and society. I'm Ron Levy. Welcome aboard. Just like most of you, I've embraced the spirit of exploration throughout my whole life, from starting my own business before graduating high school to traversing the world's most challenging terrains. I've always sought to find new frontiers. I built one of the largest award-winning custom home companies. And most recently, I've navigated complex regulations while founding and leading a public company that is dedicated to applying technology and training. So buckle up and get ready. Let's tackle uncharted territories in AI today with curiosity as our guiding star. So today we've got Brian Shang. He's the founder and CEO of AquaBite, and he's pioneering AI-driven solutions for aquaculture farms worldwide. Graduating top of his class at Princeton, he has been working with AI, deep learning, and data sciences as a co-founder and CTO for Nikal Investments, IQ License, and HistoWiz, which focuses on algorithmic trading, the licensing industry, and pathology, respectively. His work has garnered him recognition on Forbes 30 Under 30 Leader in manufacturing and industry. AquaBite pioneers sustainable fish production through innovative machine learning and computer vision solutions. They have offices in Norway and the US and Chile, where they collaborated with Amazon's Dr. Werner Vogels, addressing the world's first sustainability challenges. They aim to optimize fish farming efficiency, closing the impending protein deficit, with milestones spanning from bathtub prototypes to global recognition. Yes, you heard me right, bathtub prototypes. AquaBite combines Silicon Valley ingenuity and aquaculture expertise to deliver groundbreaking technology, revolutionizing the future of food production. Welcome to the show, Brighton. And I got to tell you, I'm so excited about this. You're talking about food, and there's so much going on in the world around that right now that I'm really excited to be able to have you here and learn some. So you've been in so many different fields that in hindsight, you know, they have little in common. Can you walk us through your journey into AI?
Absolutely. And I think even though we're talking about different industries from finance to fish farming, the common thread for me was always this notion of data science, machine learning, AI that ties it all together. I'd actually studied machine learning, data science in college. So I got a degree in financial engineering, operations research from Princeton, as you mentioned, and started off in the algorithmic trading industry. So built trading algorithms to automatically buy and sell stocks. And then after that, got into more typical, I guess you could say, traditional tech industry. So was the co-founder CTO of a company involved in brand licensing, where we were connecting brands with manufacturers and built a data science infrastructure to connect the two. After that, got more into the computer vision side of things. So I was the CTO of a company called HistoWiz, which was doing computer vision for cancer detection. And then this latest company has really put all of that together. So we have the computer vision piece with the camera underwater that's monitoring the fish. So we're looking at the fish's health, growth based on the image. And then we also take that data and we use AI models to help forecast the fish's growth and figure out what's the best way to feed and grow the fish and keep them healthy. So I think it's really come full circle, and actually going through these different disciplines gives you a different perspective on how these different models can be used.
From the standpoint of building a company, everything you just said is so powerful, because you're right. You did so many different things that seemingly are unattached, yet combine, they create a foundation, and then you apply it to something like the food industry is just a big thank you. It's just spectacular. I'm going to give a little framework here. We can go from there, but a camera that was born in a San Francisco bathtub helped to optimize fish farming. Strange statement, right? But that's the case here. And AquaByte, which is you know, developed in that way, it aims to revolutionize fish farming sustainability with precision dual lens cameras, monitor fish growth, and detect anomalies, propelling the industry toward a healthier, more efficient future. Their global expansion signifies a humble beginnings, remarkable journey. So that is all a mouthful, but maybe you can speak to that a little bit. So you brought us up to starting AquaByte, but tell us about this coming together from the bathtub till now and the foundation of it.
So I don't have any background in fish farming or fishing. My background is more on the applied machine learning side. And coming to San Francisco, I had the opportunity to incubate a new company that was focused on applied AI. And one of the industries I heard about from a friend of mine was the fish farming industry. And reading more about it, something actually that doesn't happen in the U.S., but in places like Norway, where they have these, you know, large pens in the fjords, this is actually the source of over half the fish that we eat. So fish farming accounts for the fastest growing sector of food production. More than half the fish we eat comes from a farm. And in that, kind of, you have this inherent challenge where the fish is under the water. How do you know if the fish is healthy? How do you know if you're feeding them the right amount of food? And so therein, kind of a camera-based solution could really help with that. And so, as you mentioned, I first started out by building a prototype. So literally piecing together, you know, a camera system that could monitor, at the time, you know, my bathtub was like these robotic toy fish, but basically piecing together these algorithms could build an end-to-end pipeline that could take an image of a fish and then ultimately output the weight. And, you know, from that, certainly started in the bathtub in San Francisco, but then soon went to all, of all places, Norway, where, Norway produces over the half the world's salmon, and ended up living there for a period of time to commercialize the business. So from that perspective, I think for me, it was less about the industry to start or having in-depth knowledge, but really that sense of discovery, getting started, building a prototype, and then finding the ideal market to start in.
So it sounds like AI was necessary, machine learning / AI, I guess, was absolutely necessary to take the images you're able to get underwater and turn them into usable data, right? And really do something with it. So you mentioned weight of the fish. Is there anything else that you're processing information-wise, data-wise, to help determine what's going on with the fish?
Looking at all the observable indicators that you can get from the fish. So as you mentioned, the camera has two lenses. So like we have two eyes, it can sense depth. So we're using that to get a 3D model of the fish to then figure out the weight of the fish. We also look at the health of the fish. So for example, parasites or sea lice that's on the fish that is regulated by the food safety authorities. So, for example, we were the first in Norway to be approved by the equivalent of the FDA there for automatically monitoring these parasites. We also more generally look at the health and welfare of the fish. So we look at, does the fish have wounds? Is it deformed? More generally, quality that defines, is the fish good enough to be used for sushi, or is it more for cat and dog food? And that's all based on, again, the same image that we're taking underwater and analyzing that. We're even looking at behavioral factors of the fish. So how is the fish swimming? Is it stressed? And so taking all that information and really kind of then extracting all those signals with computer vision and then applying AI on top of that to then use it in day-to-day farming.
So I'd imagine the more you use this, the more you find out other things to measure, and you just keep adding to your tech. And it's great. It makes sense from my mind to start in Norway because they have so many fish farms. But I'm gonna kind of bring up the fact there's been some bad press about some of the quality coming out of the fish farms in Norway as opposed to wild caught. Can you speak to that? And is AquaBite part of the either detection and or solution to that?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So take a Norwegian salmon farm. I would say that's one of the most sustainable, pristine types of fish farming. Of course, it varies around the world. And Norway, as I mentioned, they have regulations around parasites. They have regulations around how much fish you can have in a pen to not impact the local environment. That said, it's quite challenging to manage these farms because before having these type of systems, it's practically impossible to know how the fish are growing throughout, the year and a half that it's growing. And so we're really providing the data that's helping farmers measure and manage all the risks that come with fish farming. Now, I think you also bring up another point, because when I often talk about fish farming, there's often this discussion between farmed and wild. And first off, we don't really talk about that in the context of overfishing, where if you look at the global ocean stocks, over 90% of our, we have 90% of our fish are overfished. And so to grow sustainable protein in general, you need to find ways to grow more and more healthy protein. And fish is one of the most healthy sources of protein. So for example, compared to beef, beef is almost, 7 times more CO2 emissions, 7 times more greenhouse gas emissions. In terms of feed, it's almost 7 pounds of feed for 1 pound of beef. Whereas with fish, much less greenhouse gas emissions, it's almost 1 to 1 in terms of 1 pound of feed turns into 1 pound of fish. And that's really important because we need healthy, sustainable protein to feed a growing population. And one other thing I'll also add is, like, if you like eating sushi like I do, actually all the salmon sushi you eat is farmed because the wild salmon has too much contaminants, so you can't eat it. And so from that perspective, from a nutrition perspective, it's in some ways a lot healthier to eat and safer to eat.
So it's kind of fascinating, and you and I had talked before, and you brought something up, and I'll try and do the analogy. I think you did it better, but you talk about beef, and not having a fish farm would be tantamount to not having a ranch for beef, right? Just have free roam everywhere, and collect what you need when you need it. It obviously not sustainable, wouldn't work, which is why we've had ranches for I don't know how many hundreds of years, but a very long time. And that's what's being done here, but the conditions are different when you pen the fish and do it. And I think the industry itself is learning, even though fish farms are not new. Without your product, or prior to your product, and let's just focus on AI, prior to AI being able to power your product, they just didn't have the information. I would think this is, no matter how long fish farms have been in existence, this is you're creating a huge turning point for the health of fish farming. Am I stating that accurate?
No, absolutely. And certainly I think, as you mentioned, fish farming or fish in general is one of the last types of food that we still have institutionalized hunting, or we hunt and gather kind of the food that we eat. In other industries, you have typical farming and production of food. And that's to say, I mean, I think certainly the sustainability challenge around fish farming, we want to be part of the solution and help make farms more sustainable, but by providing that critical data, data on the growth of the fish, health of the fish, that allows farmers to make better decisions. Because ultimately, healthier fish sells for a higher price, is good for the farmer, is good for the environment. But prior to having something like this, was really hard to manage.
Really fascinating. So the UN summit, they discussed how to use AI for good, right? So the CTO is Dr. Werner Vogels, and he's at Amazon, and he forecast groundbreaking advancements during his keynote. And that was using AI to tackle our planet's most urgent problems. Big statement, especially for this podcast. That's why we're so excited about AI, and we bring all kinds of industries that are being now supported by AI. And this one, to me, seems incredibly relevant. Predictions include, from his speech, the predictions include simulated worlds, revolutionizing experimentation, a surge in smart energy innovation and supply chain transformations, and mainstream adoption of custom silicon technology, all born out of AI. So how has your experience in using AI for cancer detection influenced your approach to fish farming?
Well, I think the idea that we have all these different machine learning models and AI models that have been built for different industries, the same model that's helping your Tesla drive on an autopilot basis, we're using underwater to detect fish, the same model that we're using to detect cancer tissues. And so it's the application and adaptation of these models in different environments that's important. In some sense, you could say that the model that we're using to detect a fish is not that sophisticated, but really the hard work is adapting that model to make sure that it works in different water conditions, different environments, different behaviors of the fish. And that's really kind of that last mile, kind of 20%, to make sure that the model works for industrial use. And so I'd say, in terms of kind of my experience, it's really understanding how do you take a theoretical model and really adapt it to the real world and have it be accepted by both, customers, but also governments.
The way I see it is AI becomes the hub here, right? And whether it's cancer over here or fish farming over there and plus 1,000 other things, you're creating an ecosystem of AI. So the more you improve your niche and what you're doing, it ultimately will feed information over to cancer research, or I'll just say personal health, right? Because what you're learning about fish. So it illustrates how important AI is and how big it is and how fast it's moving and how everybody involved, yourself not only included, but especially, adds to the knowledge stack within AI that's going to help absolutely everything. And I think it's pretty amazing. And do you agree with what I kind of the direction I went, saying that what you're learning will also create some good data for healthier people, people just being able to be healthier and maybe assess their any illnesses that they may have?
I'd say that, I mean, there's that's applicable on a number of different levels. I mean, we are doing cutting edge research on the AI side. We're also doing cutting edge research on the fish and marine biology side. So we probably have the largest data set on how fish grow and fish welfare. And so certainly that's useful for the production of the fish. It's also that ultimately kind of ties to the consumer of the fish. So someone who's, making a purchase in a supermarket wants to know how the fish was grown. We're ultimately providing that data to help them make a sustainable choice. And so certainly I think it's all related. And certainly the models that we're building are models that would be used in other contexts, such as in healthcare.
I think it does tie all together. And I think it's really important. And in your perfect world, it sounds like fish farming would replace wild caught on a commercial level anyway. And that in itself becomes very important to our oceans. Am I right?
I'd say for us, we're less about kind of farm versus wild or replacing wild, but more that, put it this way, the oceans are 70% of covering the Earth, yet we produce only 5% of our protein from the ocean. So it's just a tremendous opportunity to produce a lot more healthy and sustainable protein. And honestly speaking, I think we need to take wild-caught, farmed, they're even creating cell-based, fish as well. We need all of that to kind of feed the growing population. So it's not either or. And I think what farmed versus wild will be is more a marketing thing more than anything.
Makes sense. And you had, it's really great that you were able to work with Dr. Vogels, the Amazon's CTO and vice president in charge of driving technology innovation. It must have offered some unique perspectives for you on what's possible technologically. Can you take us through that experience in Norway as you were working with Dr. Vogels?
Yeah, so for those who aren't familiar, so he has a TV show called Now Go Build, where he goes to these different places around the world and just interviews different companies that are using AI in unique contexts. And so in that TV episode, which is also on YouTube, we go to a fish farm and I show him in the pen, the camera, and then kind of also on the barge where there's the dashboard and they're using that data to make decisions. And so it's kind of AI in the real world, so to speak. And it's a great application because it's not just a single application. Like, it's not just only the computer vision. It's the computer vision aspect, but it's also the more quantitative machine learning that uses the data to kind of make forecasts and predictions and decisions. And so it's really cool. And also it combines the edge compute aspect of it. So a lot of the algorithms itself are running on the camera in the fjord and then are, piped up to the cloud, where of course you have the Amazon Web Services component of it. So it's a really interesting use case from a lot of different aspects, from the fact that it's in the field, it has an interesting architecture, and it also uses a lot of different AI models.
So aquaculture industry, that's really the industry you're in, and it's continuing to evolve, obviously. But how do you see the role of AI expanding within sustainable fish farming specifically? What potential impacts might it have on global food security and environmental conservation efforts beyond what we've talked about already?
So we've just, started just by providing the data itself, data on the fish's health, on the growth of the fish. And the next step is to really take that to decision support. So how do you feed the fish? How do you treat the fish? When do you harvest the fish? These are all based on kind of AI models that help, a farmer make a better decision. The next layer on top of that is the automation level, where you're creating models to automatically feed the fish, automatically treat the fish. And what this is getting to is ultimately a world where you can have a fully autonomous fish farm that can be operating in the middle of the ocean or on land, where you can't have people there, but you can significantly expand production, which is really exciting because most fish farming right now needs to happen near shore, where people can go to the farm itself. But once you have it, like a fully AI-driven fish farm, then you can have it in the open ocean where it's too rough to have people, but really expand production.
It's amazing. And you are working with Norway, which is a fantastic place, but I know there's a lot of fish farms in Asia as well. Are you touching anything over there?
So we work in other countries. We're in 5 different countries. Another region is South America, Chile, where they also have fish farms. We work primarily with salmon and trout right now, but eventually our goal is to, expand from Norwegian salmon to all the different places where they grow salmon to other species around the world.
Fantastic. So let's talk about the Nature Conservancy. So it's the largest in the world environmental nonprofit, and they're invested in Aquabyte as a startup, and they've never done that before. But they share insights on portfolio decarbonization, emphasizing its commitment to reducing direct emissions from the public portfolio by 90% relative to global equity benchmarks. So while ensuring strong investment returns, and despite the challenges, they've achieved 87% underscoring the importance of sustainable finance in addressing climate and biodiversity crises. So talk to us a little bit about the Nature Conservancy, their investment in you and you as a private company, and some of these unique qualities really, in my mind, are totally fed by AI. Without AI, none of this would be possible.
Right. It's super exciting. I mean, we talk about sustainability and, you know, oftentimes we talk about sustainability as it's a nonprofit kind of thing that you need to give giving something up to work in sustainability. And for us, you know, being a for-profit company that's also really sustainability driven, it shows that you can have these startups, you know, raise venture capital and do good things in the world. And so it was really exciting to have the Nature Conservancy, as you mentioned, you know, one of their first investments into a private company of this sort. And for us, when we talk about sustainability, it's both the environmental side, which of course, you know, the Nature Conservancy is very focused on, but also the social welfare side. So, you know, from an animal welfare standpoint, are these fish, do they have good growing conditions? Are they healthy? And we're literally measuring the impact of that, having that data on the farmers' decisions to track, you know, reducing feed waste, how much did that save in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, or in terms of the actual animal welfare of how are the fish growing, are they healthy? And so it's really exciting to work with the Nature Conservancy because, you know, for us, you know, sustainability, we literally have someone in us who's invested in our mission of sustainability.
Man, talk about validation. It's really, really, it's pretty amazing. So it's really great. So let's talk about the decarbonization efforts. And you've learned lessons, you know, on decarbonization efforts thus far. How might these lessons inform future sustainability initiatives, not just for Aquavite, but for, you know, the broader emerging tech industry in general?
Yeah, and I think the theme here is, I mean, this is AI applied in the real world. And so when we talk about decarbonization, we're not talking about, I mean, for example, I know a lot of companies are into carbon credits, and that's great. There are also ways where AI can make literal direct impact. I mean, you talk about food production, it's one of the largest sources of greenhouse gas emissions. I mentioned beef was 7 times more per pound of protein. And so, you know, by promoting production of a more sustainable protein, and also in the production of the fish itself, figuring out how to produce the fish in ways that are more more sustainable, reduce feed waste. These are direct ways where you can impact decarbonization and sustainability beyond more indirect ways as well. And so for us, that's really unique because literally kind of the data and decisions we're providing are helping the farmer make better decisions and ultimately reduce their carbon impact.
So there's two tension points that came to mind when you were just describing all that. And it exists in our food systems now, whether it's in the ocean or on land. And that is where there's a big drive for sustainability and reducing carbon emissions and all of that, which is great ecologically, right? But the other side of it is some of these changes we've made have produced food that isn't as healthy for us. And there's things that have gone on there that there's an undercurrent of people that are, I'll just say, rejecting and finding other solutions to work around that. So those are two tension points. But with what you're describing, it sounds like you're not making them opposed to each other. You're doing the sustainability, but with your tech, you're going to help solve some of these health issues, I'll call it, detect them early. Can you speak to that a little bit? And am I right on that?
I think that's right. And to be fair, I mean, not all fish farming is perfect and not all farms are sustainable, but you need to start from somewhere. And, you know, for us, it's starting from within, getting the farmers to use it, and then themselves seeing the need to be more sustainable and using that data to improve. And so certainly, you know, we're starting with farms in Norway, which, again, I think are, you know, of the different types of fish farming, one of the most sustainable industries in the world. But then you kind of go to other places which maybe don't have as good growing practices. But instead of saying, okay, we're going to completely reject this type of food production, which in the grand scheme of things is necessary, but to kind of help these farmers improve, help them reduce their feed spill, help them improve the quality of their fish. Because again, you know, reducing the cost of growing the fish, making healthier fish is also good for the farmer. So it's, you know, win-win all around.
Yeah, and that reduces these tension points that are pulling outward against opposing each other and brings them all together. And that's what I would absolutely hope for. And maybe with the power of AI, we have the ability to close that gap now and everybody wins. These two positions don't oppose each other. They're actually working together. And that to me is an amazing milestone based on where we're at with food supply in general. So to be part of that, I commend you. It's pretty fantastic. Is there anything we haven't covered on other ways you think that AI can support a better food system and other social impact focused ventures that we haven't covered yet?
Well, I'll just add one other thing that I'd mentioned, but I think is also important, is the role of governments, regulations, kind of the, you know, not just the commercial side of it, but kind of how do governments that are regulating food safety, environmental safety, kind of understand the impact of AI models. And kind of one of the unique things that we did as a company was to have the first AI-based regulation in Norway for monitoring the sea lice parasite. So by law, before this, you would have to go out to a fish pen. You need to net, you know, 10, 20 fish every week and count it by hand, the amount of sea lice. And so, you know, we have the first approved system that, based on an AI-based system, can fulfill those counting regulations. And when you talk about AI-based systems where naturally there's uncertainty, you know, the machine learning model maybe doesn't always do what you want it, kind of getting a regulator to understand that these AI-based models are acceptable and can be used in prime time. And so that's really something for, you know, even the regulators and government side, because I think once they understand the impact of AI, then that will also help accelerate kind of adoption, of course, in addition to the normal commercialization of AI. So I thought that's kind of, you know, really unique and important. And that's, of course, you know, our examples in food safety, but it's also applicable for different types of industries around the world, where if government understand kind of AI and the impact that it can have, they'd be more accepting of these types of models in practice to be applied and deployed.
So I personally haven't heard that term before, sea lice. I assume they are visible to the human eye, which is why it was done manually. Thereby, they are visible to your lenses as well. Is that correct?
That's right. And it's naturally occurring parasite as well. So if you know, go off the coast of Monterey, you catch a fish, it'll have sea lice, but we want to make sure that the sea lice are at a sustainable level.
Got it. Are there any other initiatives you can share that you find interesting that are also leveraging AI? Maybe another partnership on the horizon, or can you share anything else with our audience on additional initiatives?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as I mentioned, you know, we have the data itself. We're working on how do we use that data to make decisions, to get to automation. We're also looking at adapting the model that we built on salmon to other species of fish. And for us, you know, this, in some ways, a fish is a fish. It's underwater. So if you can do it for a salmon, you can do it for a trout, you can do it for a sea bass. And so adapting it to different environments. And then from that, I mean, it's kind of the impact of that data, you know, for farmers, for the suppliers that are, you know, producing the eggs, producing the feed, producing the therapeutics that go into growing a fish. And then it's also ultimately going to the consumer, where I think for example, if you buy a, you know, beef in the supermarket, you think, okay, grass-fed beef or cage-free eggs, but you don't really have that equivalent in fish. Kind of what is that equivalent? And so I think by providing this data, we can also help consumers understand kind of what is a sustainably grown fish and, you know, impact their purchasing decisions.
I love all of it. It's you know, more data, more transparency for all, for the farmers, for the public. It's really, really great. And as you mentioned, for the regulators, whether it be in individual countries or even world organizations, it's what you're doing is amazing. But now we're going to jump into AI Wants to Know. AI, it's as curious as we are. These are 10 quick questions designed to uncover the intriguing human mysteries that AI longs to comprehend but can't quite grasp. It's a snack break in our journey, so keep your answers quick. But the safety belt, that's off. If it feels right, we can occasionally roam about the cabin, exploring more of who you are and what makes you tick. You ready for this?
NFTLA returns as an inclusive week of community events throughout LA, celebrating the outer edge of innovation.
Builders be building.
There's so much energy colliding around gaming, AI, generative art, the metaverse, decentralized social, and the future of entertainment.
If you want to be in the mix, including the official free NFTLA celebration, visit outeredge.live to subscribe for your updates and RSVP.
All right, you should be scared, and I'm just kidding. What's the first thing you ever remember being proud of?
You know, I was going to say, like, tying my shoes or something like that, but I think it was, convincing my dad to try out for the JV soccer team when I beat him in a race, because he really wanted me to focus on academics and I was, you know, really wanted to do other things. So
good for you. Good for you. I'm sure he was proud of you for it. What do others often look to you for help with?
Something I'm like really good with data and being analytical and, being impartial and getting to the core of a matter. Being really incisive and also putting together different aspects, whether that's the business side with the technical side and really drilling down to the core of a matter.
Fabulous. And what do you treasure most about your own human abilities?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I've been able to experience a wide range of different experiences, different industries, go into a place like Norway at a fish farm where I never expected I would be, and give me a different perspective about kind of what's available in the world, different talents that's in different places, and just, you know, general human ingenuity and, you know, the drive to improve that is not just limited to a place like Silicon Valley, but is, you know, really worldwide.
It strikes me that we talk about AI or artificial intelligence. What you just described was real intelligence, the ability to feed in all kinds of data and go places that it didn't go before. That was fantastic. Loved it. And throughout your whole life, what is the most consistent thing about you?
I'd say, again, I've been, numbers oriented. I've also been, I'm good, like good under pressure, running a startup for the last, you know, decade plus. For me, it's just normal. So in that way, I think I, you know, thrive under uncertainty and innovation, and, you know, that's been pretty consistent.
Great. And then throughout your whole life, what has changed the most?
You know, when I was young, I used to be fairly quiet and reserved. And I think, in the later half of life, I've been a bit, you know, more extroverted, more open, really enjoy meeting people. I came into these to Aquabyte, you know, being more of an engineer on the AI side, and really, you know, now more on the business side as a CEO. And so that's been a transformation.
Yep. And what is it that you find strangest about reality?
You know, so I was over this last winter break, I took a trip to Southeast Asia, to Laos, and I was at a rice farm there. And, you know, there, people are living on $3 a day. And, you know, I was kind of, you know, literally in the fields, kind of learning how they were farming the rice. And, you know, just a week ago, prior to that, I was, you know, in Silicon Valley talking with people about AI and talking to you about AI right now. And what's really, you know, strange or astonishing to me is that, you know, we're living in the same world, and yet we're having very different experiences. And so I think, again, kind of tying, you know, those two worlds together is really interesting. But there is a still significant part of the world that, you know, is not even exposed to AI or this type of innovation, which is really strange to me.
So. And that not only is those parts of the world equally as important as the rest, in some ways they're more important, because where we've, I want to use the term gone astray. That's not really right, because I do, you know, I see things very favorably, but we can still learn from going back to some of the basics, and that's what they're experiencing. And I love those environments. So I feel very close to what you just said. you know, in life, we've all had those moments in time where you just feel really alive. Something in particular happens, or you experience something and you just feel this really alive feeling. When's the most recent example of that for you?
You know, out of all things, I really enjoy singing. I used to be in an a cappella group, and I like singing. And so when I get together with the team, I try to get them to go out and just have a bit of fun. So, last time I went out with the team and tried to get them out and go singing, I think is, when I felt most alive.
I love that. And that's repeatable. So that's even better for you. That's fantastic. And what do you think is your most unique trait?
You know, I haven't, when I first graduated from college, I worked at a job for 3 months. And then after that, the company shut down, and then I've been working on startups. And so for me, I don't really have an idea of what it's like to work at a quote unquote normal company. So I think for me coming into this company, I'm really thinking about things from first principles, and that's in some ways challenging, but it's also refreshing because a lot of the preconceived notions you would have, I don't really have that basis. And so that's perhaps a bit unique.
So basically what you're saying is you're unemployable. that's most entrepreneurs. So it fits right into that. It's a great trait to have. If you weren't human, what would you be?
I'd be a dog, because I like being around other people. And so, I think so. Yeah.
Fascinating. All right. We're going to throw you this one. If AI can eat, what do you think their favorite dish would be and why?
Of course, I need to say a salmon. So either like a baked salmon, or actually in Norway, so you can buy these packets of sashimi, like half a kilo of sashimi, and just like cut it up. And those are really good as well. So the one of those two.
That was great. We learned a lot about you, and I really appreciate that. I want to head to AI leaders and some influences you may have. Can you tell us about some leaders you notice in the world of AI? And tell us who you'd like to see Edge of AI podcast interview. Why?
Yeah, I am really drawn to. So first off, like I think AI is really popular now, especially with generative AI. I'm really interested in applications of real world AI, like what we're working on in fish farming. I think the most notable example of this would probably be what, you know, Elon Musk has done in a number of industries, from Tesla to SpaceX. That said, there are other folks who are working on really cool AI in other industries. I'll give one example. There's a company called Konix that's based in Germany, which is using sensors on rail tracks to kind of measure vibration, and then based on that, understand if the track needs maintenance, or the train has the right cargo, and so on. So, and that's an application that you might not think of, but is also, you know, really important real world application.
It's so brilliant. And I love things that are built on basics. Of course, those rails vibrate. It's something we never would have thought about. Someone thought about it. That's brilliant.
Right. And I think there's like 100 other applications like that. And just to maybe also say, I mean, I think we benefit a lot from the Silicon Valley ecosystem. So, for example, you know, early in the development of Aquavite, through one of our board members, we were introduced to Andre Karpathy, who is the, you know, director of Autopilot at Tesla, who helped us think through a number of the AI models. We had a number of different AI advisors like that. Who, you know, helped us along the way. And so I think, you know, for them, of course, they have their day jobs, but like it's a really unique application. And so, just more generally kind of really drawn to these really different and unique applications of AI.
Those are some great examples. Is there anyone else that has been a major influence with you, either in AI, but maybe even outside too, that have influenced the way you're developing Aquabyte?
So I would say, you know, getting started in Silicon Valley is not easy, especially when you're not from, so I'm from New York and not from the Valley. And so going there, there was a guy named Amit Mukherjee, who is a partner at NEA, who really, you know, convinced the firm to take a bet on me and allow me to incubate my company out of their VC firm. And so through them, I met another partner there, Greg Papadopoulos, who is the former CTO of Sun Microsystems, who's on our board, who helped co-develop the idea with me. And so, but if it wasn't for Amit taking a bet on me, I think you really need that critical break to kind of get started. And so that's kind of what he provided to me. And then if I had to say one other, it would be, you know, my old co-founder, Tony Ling, who actually kind of was the first person to suggest fish and fish farming to me and really, you know, point me in that direction. If it wasn't for them, I'd probably be working on something else.
Those are powerful, really great. I'm glad we asked that, because it's really powerful people that point to your getting started, your growth, the intellect behind it, and their experience in the industry. It's really, really says a lot. Is there anybody else you could think of, although you've said some great ones already, and or do you want to share their Twitter handles anyway so our listeners can know who to follow?
Yeah, I mean, I think Amit Mukherjee is just at Amit Mukherjee. I don't know if Tony is on Twitter or not, but I would say that I've had the chance to meet a lot of, you know, really accomplished folks. So, for example, on our board as well is Jan Udenfelt, who's the, you know, inventor of GSM, was the CTO at Ericsson and Sony Mobile. So, you know, I actively kind of work with him to develop the company. And then, you know, in the, you know, Silicon Valley ecosystem, had met a number of folks, you know, even through HistoWiz during the YC days, went to office hours with Sam Altman, who's, of course, now the CEO of OpenAI. And so I think that community there is really kind of, you know, in investing in kind of folks that kind of ultimately are taking AI to different places. And so, but I would say, I would say Amit, Tony, and then, you know, if I had to point out one other person, I'd say, you know, Bucky Moore, who, you know, was formerly at Cosino Ventures, now is a partner at Kleiner Perkins, who helped introduce me to Andre Karpathy, helped us recruit our, you know, first, you know, computer vision PhD and a number of AI advisors. And so there's a number of folks who were involved in the company who are no longer, but are still, you know, very helpful and influential in helping me get started.
You know, your board is amazing. You've proven yourself amazing, even just on this podcast. It just strikes me that your main quality that got you here was excellence, because you picked up and moved from New York to Silicon Valley, where a lot of people would roll their eyes because how many people before you have tried that and not succeeded. But it sounds like, I mean, look at top of your class at Princeton, you've always chased excellence. And when you got there, you got the attention of some incredibly notable people. And now you've got Aquabyte, which is built on all that exceptionalism. So I just wanted to point it out and just say, none of that went unnoticed that you just saw. That's, you put together an amazing company with an amazing board, and congratulations on that. You know, let's jump into some resources. So if you can share a handful of your favorite resources within AI. Yeah, I think you were prepared for this particular question. Do you have any ideas to point out?
Well, I'd say maybe not so much AI, but in general, starting a company. I think, you know, on the technical side, there's a lot of great online courses. Like one of them I remember was Balaji Srinivasan's Startup Engineering course, which he taught at Stanford, which I believe is available online, which was just a really great primer into, you know, how to build a good technical company. I'd say, you know, along those lines, you know, Andrew Ng's course on machine learning on Coursera. And then I'd say just getting out there and meeting folks. you know, there are conferences like NIPS and CVPR, you know, major conferences in AI and machine learning that you just go there and there's thousands of people and super friendly and working on, you know, all types of AI. And so, you know, just going to those conferences and walking around. And yes, I'm not, you know, a PhD academic, but, you know, I could understand what people are working on. And I think those type of kind of in-person resources are really engaging as well, in addition to kind of the nuts and bolts learning.
So those conferences, and I've loved conferences in every industry I've touched, but especially where emerging technologies are involved. Can you name your, you know, for our listeners' point, if they're going to go to a conference or two, which ones do you find the most valuable?
Yeah, so I would say those two that I mentioned. So NIPS, NeurIPS, which is I'd say the largest, the leading conference in all things kind of machine learning, AI, data science. It is an academic conference, but there's a bunch of folks in industry there. And then CVPR, which is a computer vision focused conference. If you're into that, I would suggest that. I know NVIDIA also has their conference as well, which is more focused on industry, but that one's, you know, more applied. So I think, you know, these are really good forums to, you know, see what the cutting edge is, but don't feel bewildered if you can't read a PhD paper.
All right. Well, then the last tips for our listeners' sake are going to be maybe more personal than business. Is there any AI tools that you're using or you can suggest that, you know, our listeners could use for any purpose, quite honestly, that'll have them, you know, get jump-started a little bit? Anything in particular?
Yeah. I mean, one thing I would say, you know, as a tip or tool is that I think to get started, you don't need to use AI from the get-go. And what I mean is that there's this notion of a human in the loop, where you can get started by just literally having a human or a person do the thing that you want it to do. So for example, if you wanted to detect a picture of a fish, and instead of building a model from day one, you can just have a person label that fish. And then, you know, every time you do that, you're building a data set that then you feed into the model. And so from day one, you can get started without needing to know AI, without having to build a model, build the data process, get the data set, and then later on, train a model that reduces the cost of delivering that. And so that's a tip in terms of just getting started, because ultimately, in some ways, you can think of AI as a cost-saving technique where, yes, theoretically, if you had a lot of money, you could just hire a bunch of people just to do this business process. But the AI is really allowing you to do it cost efficiently. And so in that way, an AI company is not so different than other companies. It just allows you to have economies of scale. So that's kind of one thing. And then I'd say kind of in terms of the industry you choose, you know, of course, in cancer detection, if you make a mistake, that's, you know, catastrophic. You know, if we make a mistake in detecting a fish, you know, we can live with that. And so I think it really depends on the application of AI and what industry and how you're using it. And if you pick an industry where you can make mistakes in the beginning, I think that's kind of more inherently adaptable to AI business models.
All super great advice. I think that those are great learnings for the listeners. So I thank you very, very much for that. Where can our listeners go to learn more about you and the projects that you're working on?
So I would say definitely check out the video with Werner and I at the fish farm. That's great. That's on YouTube. And then more generally, if you want to check us out, you know, go to aquabyte.ai. That's our website, or just follow us on LinkedIn.
Fantastic. Brighton Chang, I can't thank you enough for taking time out here. Our listeners are the better for it, and we really appreciate it. But right now, it's time for another safe landing at the outer edges of the AI universe for today. This is your Captain Ron, and on behalf of our guest and the entire crew, I'd like to thank you for choosing to voyage with us today. We wish you a safe and enjoyable continuation of your journey. When you come back aboard, make sure to bring a friend. Our starship, well, it's always ready for more adventures. If you're listening, go to Spotify or iTunes right now, rate us, and say something awesome. Or if you're watching this on YouTube, hit the subscribe button and pass this episode on to a friend or two. Your support and feedback mean the world to us. Don't forget to visit edgeofai.xyz, where you can learn more about partnering and subscribe to the Outer Edge newsletter for the latest Edge of company news, events, and show drops. In addition, connect with us on all the major social platforms by searching for edgeof_AI. Join the exciting conversations that are happening online. Before we sign off, mark your calendars for our next voyage, where we'll continue unraveling AI's mysteries and advancements. Until then, bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed on Edge of AI reflect solely those views and opinions of the show hosts and its guests. Please make sure to do your own research. While we make every effort to ensure that the information about AI technology is accurate and up to date, we cannot guarantee its accuracy, completeness, or timeliness. We make no representations or warranties of any kind with respect to the information, products, or services discussed. Please be aware AI may occasionally generate incorrect or misleading information and produce offensive or biased content. Under no circumstances shall we be liable for any loss or damage, including without limitation, indirect or consequential loss or damage, or any loss or damage arising from loss of data or profits arising out of or in connection with the use of technology discussed on our podcast. Additionally, our show is not financial advice. You understand that you are using any and all information available on or through this podcast at your own risk. Whenever making financial decisions, we recommend doing your own research and talking to your accountant for financial advice. Lastly, time to time, we may feature sponsored content on the show for which we receive value, and we may share links for which we receive a commission if you make a purchase through one of these links. Refer to our website, edgeofai.xyz, for our full disclaimer, terms and conditions, privacy policy, and copyright notice. The views and opinions expressed on Edge of AI reflect solely those views and opinions of the show hosts and its guests. Please make sure to do your own research. While we make every effort to ensure that the information about AI technology is accurate and up to date, we cannot guarantee its accuracy, completeness, or timeliness. We make no representations or warranties of any kind with respect to the information, products, or services discussed. Please be aware AI may occasionally generate incorrect or misleading information and produce offensive or biased content. Under no circumstances shall we be liable for any loss or damage, including without limitation, indirect or consequential loss or damage, or any loss or damage arising from loss of data or profits arising out of or in connection with the use of technology discussed on our podcast. Additionally, our show is not financial advice. You understand that you are using any and all information available on or through this podcast at your own risk. Whenever making financial decisions, we recommend doing your own research and talking to your accountant for financial advice. Lastly, time to time, we may feature sponsored content on the show for which we receive value, and we may share links for which we receive a commission if you make a purchase through one of these links. Refer to our website, edgeofai.xyz, for our full disclaimer, terms and conditions, privacy policy, and copyright notice.